We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Good afternoon, good morning, wherever you may be in the United States, outside of the United States. We are here for the Guilty as Charged podcast Saturday Q&A. I'm Alex, and I'm here with my guy, Kyle. Kyle, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Alex. We got game two, Avalanche versus Lightning tonight. Mm-hmm. Fired up for that, yeah. So it's a good day.
Yeah, Kyle's Avalanche looked to take a 2-0 lead, so we'll see how that pans out. As always, you can join our YouTube channel memberships, which are down below. If you want to check those out, check us out on Patreon, all the platforms, expressvpn.com/guilty, where you can commit illegal cybercrime. If you actually go get a subscription, you can use our promo code guilty for a 3-month free trial of a VPN. And I think that's all the plugs. Go check out all the links in the description. But anyway, we do have a couple comments in the chat. First, Tyler asks, is the dentist going okay? I did go to the dentist. That went all right. So thank you for asking, Tyler. I think we covered this one a bit, but Wrong Speedy did ask, is there a chance that they bring back O'Day, or did he sign somewhere? He didn't sign anywhere, but O'Day did have a tweet a month ago that he's pretty much not coming back to the Chargers. So that, unfortunately, is looking a lot less likely. He said if they did bring him back, then Filer to right tackle would become more interesting.
That would be incredible. That would be, you know, a great situation to be in if we had Filer on right tackle, O'Day competing with, because a lot of people have said, well, I've talked about, you know, how we get some of these guys on the field. What do we do if we try to flex out, you know, Salyer out there or something like that? It's like, well, we don't really need to. We could move Filer over. We could fill in that right guard spot with O'Day and then have Zion play his natural left guard position. That'd be fun. But like Alex, you just said, there was that day, and it's funny how it all took place, right? He sent out that tweet, hey, LA, what's up? And everyone was like, oh my, Charger fans were like, it's happening. It's happening. and everyone got all fired up. But then it came out, I think half of us were like bracing for just doom and despair, wondering if he was going to post something about getting signed to the Rams. Some of us were hoping that it did mean he was signing with the Chargers. And then it just came out that it was a nothing burger, basically. He was just in town.
And then he was just like, I'm just going to the gym. I don't know what you guys are talking about. So I think he might've just been messing with us there, but I think he did want to come back, but you know, the forces that be made that not happen. You know, I would like to have him back for depth, but I think the team is all right as it is for now. Chris M. asks, Daniel Popper seems really high on tight end Stone Smart. Do you think he makes the team? I'll go ahead and say no right now as currently constructed, although he has been popping off these 2 days of minicamp. But, I mean, they just, to me, have too many bodies in the tight end room. You had Gerald Everett, you have Donald Parham, McKitty. There's, like, the possibility he gets that fourth tight end spot that was kind of like Steven Anderson's. So that's possible. But I just think there's too many bodies. Plus, you have Hunter Camp Moyer. Plus, you have, you know, the two fullback situation right now with Horvath and Neighbors. I would think the practice squad is much more likely for him, even if he is impressing the coaches.
Yeah, and that's still kind of making the team, right? Because some of those practice squad guys are going to get pulled up on a week-by-week basis.
Exactly. Yeah, they are. I haven't looked a lot in Stone Smart. I like his name. I mean, anyone whose name is Stone sounds like they could probably contribute to being a football player quite a bit. So that sounds good. All right, so as always, get those comments and super chats in. Teresa Papa says he was waiting for a student discount that never came. I don't know what that is about, but he will let us know. Jack asks, if Guyton can prove himself as a gunner this season or any special team standout, do you see him sticking around? If not, is he on the team next season? I'll let Kyle go on that one first. What do you think, Kyle?
Sounds good, Alex. So the Chargers are going to be in an interesting situation with Guyton next year. He's still going to be a restricted free agent technically. So they'll have the ability to slap a tender on him, which really there's only two that they could use. That would be the second round tender or the right of refusal tender. The right of refusal tender wouldn't get us any compensation if we basically gave him some sort of the right of refusal tender starts at this year. It was at like $2 million. So let's say it increases another 14% from there, which is what I'm anticipating the cap to increase by. Don't make me do that mental math, but let's just say hypothetically, 2.25 million right around there. Okay. So that would be for the right of refusal tender, but we wouldn't get compensation if he went and signed with another team. A team could then go and offer him a, let's say, just hypothetically, 2 years, $15 million contract. If we would have the right to match that, but if we didn't match it, I'm not 100% certain on this, so forgive me, but I believe we wouldn't get even a compensatory consideration the following year. So it's kind of the worst case scenario if we go through with that right of refusal tender, because I do believe we won't have the cap to sign him to what I think other teams might sign him for. Now, if we sign him to the second round tender, that this year was worth about $4 million. That might get up to like 4.4 by next year. That'd be a $4.4 million 1 year contract. But if somebody went and signed him after that, then we would get a second round pick in consideration that year. Not the following year, like if it was a compensatory pick. So to answer, long-winded answer to your question, if Guyton blows up, the greatest advantage that could be for the Chargers is for other teams to see him as being worth signing to a contract and giving up their second round pick instead of waiting the next year until he's available in free agency again, if we were to hit him with that $4 million tender. So that's what I'm kind of looking for. The other advantage to that is we have so many free agents that will be leaving this year, and we are capped at being able to earn four compensatory picks for the 2024 draft. If you see where I'm going with this, if Guyton gets signed to a restricted free agent tender, and we let him go, somebody ends up re-signing him, and then we have four free agents sign elsewhere to give us compensatory picks the year after, we've netted five extra picks instead of just four. So that would get me fired up. And I think if he excels this year, there's a good chance we do that, because $4 million, as we've seen in this last year, is not that much for a wide receiver with that kind of speed.
Right. I'm just saying, or fun talk about an idea that you could get an extra guy or even that based on, you know, his speed and his ability. If he really does blow up this year, that'd be great. I just think he's not on the team because they have Keenan Allen, you have Mike Williams, you've invested $20 million in both of them. Josh Palmer's on a rookie deal. And so at that point, you kind of have your three wide receivers. You'll probably re-sign DeAndre Carter, bring in like the next special teams guy, and then probably find a replacement for Guyton somewhere else. I just don't think that they would go invest all of that into the wide receiver room. But, you know, he could prove himself to be too vital to go as well. And maybe they do slap a second round tendency, give him a nice pay bump while still having the contract be economically salvageable for 1 year, like Kyle said. That might be the way to like kind of keep him if they wanted to do that. Mark Matlock, who plays center if Lindsley gets hurt? I think right now that is Will Clapp, who they got from the Saints. There's a backup guard center to replace Scott Quessenberry, has connections to the coaching staff. Don't really think anyone else would be under consideration. You know, you look at like Brendan Jimenez or someone like that, but you're probably, you know, putting someone who's a guard into a position they don't want to be in. And I think they're confident Will Clapp at this point, based on, you know, making him a priority when they signed him. All right. Oh, that's Teresa Compapa says he was talking about a student discount for the GAC membership. I don't think we give those out. Tyler leads the GAC membership, so you would have to ask him if there's a student discount for that. But I don't think there currently is. If the following players have decent seasons, who's more likely to get a second contract, Hillary Knott or Guyton? Kyle, if you want to go on this one first.
Yeah. Tell a reason no. So we'll rank him last. I would say because of the restricted free agent thing, it's Guyton. Because Adderley has the potential to make a lot of money this year. So, or next year, earn the money this year and make it next year. But we will be clued into that based on how many snaps we see in a three safety formation in the first couple of weeks of the season. I think if we are regularly seeing what I've been hoping to see, but hasn't shown itself in practice yet. So, you know, obviously Staley doesn't care about what I think is the best move. So he's going to do what he wants to do. If he's rolling out Callahan as our slot cornerback or star cornerback more than we see Derwin come up and play in that slot role, and, you know, rock a three safety set instead of a three cornerback set when we're in our nickel formation, then we're kind of seeing, okay, Staley's probably not going to see a third safety as a starting type player. And we just drafted Woods. So why would we keep Adderley? That's going to be the tough thing. Adderley might also give us the best chance of getting a third round, probably more like a fourth round compensatory pick. So it's not all bad, but I personally really like what Adderley brings to this defense. I think he represents the exact kind of safety that Staley needs. He just needs to clean up his tackling a little bit and not always go for the home runs when playing a pass. But overall, I think that size of speed and tenacity and willingness to get in and involved in the running game is what we need from our safeties.
Right. Yeah. Tillery last. That I don't think this is particularly close. I guess the only thing is like if he has a good year, then they could bring him back next year. But like they would have picked up the fifth year option if they were bringing Tillery back. Declining the fifth year option is a pretty evident sign he's not going to be here. Yeah, I would say Guyton is probably the most likely to be back just because of the restricted free agent of his contract. If that wasn't a thing, then maybe Nas, but they did just draft JT Woods and sort of skipped on wide receiver this draft entirely because they have Josh Palmer. So I would tend to think that Guyton is the most likely to come back. But, you know, Nas could come back, I think, as well in certain scenarios. But I just think the money you're going to be paying Derwin and the JT Woods pick, the writing kind of is on the wall there. Depends on his season, though, of course. This comes from Steven Gillard. Way too early prediction. We should target the 32nd overall pick in next year's draft. Of course, asking about first-round pick need next year. I'll take Steven's spot on the show and say right tackle. That seems to be the predominant need early on as of now. That could always change. And, you know, you take whoever is kind of like best player available at a certain position. But that is kind of the glaring hole in this roster currently. There's probably a couple other places you could go. Kyle, anything other than offensive line next year, what would be the position if the Chargers weren't to take a tackle in the first round?
It's not about the position for me. It's about the player. I'm a big fan of Michael Mayer. Michael Mayer is living in my head rent free. there's a shrine in there to him somewhere. For those that don't know who he is, he's the tight end from Notre Dame. He's often nicknamed Baby Gronk. He came into Notre Dame as a freshman at 6'4", like 250. So that's like 18, 19 years old, 6'4", 250. That's not normal. And he plays like a just stud, like a big, strong, physical linebacker, tight end. He excels in, you know, contested catches and his route running. He's dangerous when he has the ball in his hands after the catch. I'm just a huge fan of his. He would represent that kind of two-way tight end you want to see that will be very productive in the blocking game and also a surefire, safety net for Herbert down the road. And I know it's not like we have a barren tight end room right now, but he would be an exceptional talent and somebody that would be excellent to deploy in two tight end sets. And it's fair to note that Everett's only here on a 2-year deal, and first round tight ends or tight ends in general are one of those positions that does take a little bit of acclimation to the speed of the game and to the difficulty in blocking some of those defensive linemen and linebackers. So to have him next year with Everett in a contract year would kind of put us in a position to not have to put all of our eggs in the Everett basket. And I think the tight end, that a 4-man tight end room of those two, along with Parham and McKitty, would be great, assuming that we are able to re-sign Parham. Perhaps Parham does well enough this year to where we can let him go and contribute to that compensatory formula. But overall, I think Michael Mayer, even if we re-signed everybody back, is a guy that would find his way on the field and be a very big impact player for us. Yeah. And yes, James, that's right. And then Telesco can go right back to Notre Dame and have fun.
Yeah, Telesco's taking a year off of Notre Dame. So, you know, in 2023, it's going to be back on to getting Notre Dame players maybe in the first round if they really wanted to go for a tight end. There's no other position that strikes me. This will obviously become a lot more clear when we do our 2023 like draft research too, in terms of what positions are really deep, what positions aren't. I don't have a lot of takes on that right now, but I would just say probably you're looking at right tackle as like obviously the predominant thing if they want to take an offensive lineman in the first round. And then after that, you're probably looking at stuff. Maybe you go for like someone more secondary help if Staley wants to like build that out as kind of a surprise pick, even though they've invested a lot in there. Staley's kind of reaffirmed that he wants to like keep investing picks into cornerbacks and safeties. So, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me. We obviously know how much he loved Derek Stingley this year. He ended up going, you know, third overall. But had he been there, you know, for the Chargers at the pick that he was, Staley probably would have taken him, right? Even over Zion Johnson, even over all that. So I do think cornerback and safety is probably something that doesn't get talked about a lot in terms of something that's a big need for them anymore because they signed J.C. Jackson. But I do think Brandon Staley is always looking to add on to that secondary.
That's a great point, Alex. And knowing that Callahan is taking starter reps right now and is on a 1-year deal, and Michael Davis is already, you know, slid back to the fourth cornerback for us right now. So that's indicative that he's probably gone next year, unless something happens in training camp or he really steps it up during the regular season. Just right now, it seems like Staley's mindset is, yeah, he's kind of fallen out of favor. So all of a sudden, we could be losing two guys that are taking significant snaps this year. And I think you're onto something with that cornerback idea. I think that definitely could be something we pursue.
Yeah. I mean, even if you're kind of like, okay, Callahan has like a breakout year, he leaves, you know, goes to get the bag elsewhere. Michael Davis gets cut, they save $7 million. Now you're just down to J.C. Jackson and Asante Samuel Jr. And suddenly, you know, you need an influx of quarterbacks. You need an influx of DBs. So I think that just happens very quickly in the NFL, quicker than people kind of think about, generally speaking. Omar asks, after all the additions, what part of the field are you most worried about? Personally, I'm curious to see how Staley approaches special teams this year. Obviously, with new special teams coordinator Ryan Ficken in the fold. What I think I kind of know the answer, but what part of the field are you most worried about, Kyle?
Oh, myself?
Yeah.
Well, it's the obvious, you know, one that we're going to just hammer on all the time. It's the part of the field that is approximately 6 feet to Corey Linsley's right. Just the very precise part of the field that I'm the most worried about. Okay. That's
if we were to break this down into the like three parts of the field, right? If we said, you know, let's just say first, second, third level of offense and defense. If we just were to break it down like that, what kind of stands out to you then? If we just said area of the field, I guess also including special teams.
Yeah, I mean, let's see how special teams looks. I do not claim to be an expert in special teams at all. Mm-hmm. I just was a big fan of David Benn when he was the long snapper for us back in the day. But other than that, I would say I mean, the obvious answer is, you know, middle linebacker and, you know, just our intermediate, that second level of our defense. But I think I'm higher on it than most people. I'm really, really, really high on our roster right now. I don't have that many concerns. I think the most interesting thing is going to be how Lombardi play calls on offense and whether or not we take a step forward or we take a step back, because defense looks like it's going to step forward. I don't have that many concerns, but I really want to see Lombardi make sure that this offense isn't stale, that he really puts his money where his mouth is with the creativity and wrinkles that he says he's going to add in. That's where I'm most curious at this point.
Yeah. I'd say the linebackers as well, to piggyback off of your point. Like, there's just so many variables in there. What do they think of Drew Tranquil at this point? Is Kenneth Murray going to be healthy and stay healthy? And if he is healthy, like, what level is he giving you as you're probably starting middle linebacker? What's Kyle Van Noy doing, right? Like, we sort of talked about this last podcast where it seems like he's going to be a linebacker edge hybrid, but what percent is he going to be playing linebacker? What percent is he going to be playing more standard edge? I think that's kind of the big question in terms of that defense, because I think everyone feels pretty confident about the first and the third levels, but that second level I think is going to kind of make or break a lot of drives for the Chargers, especially given their history on run defense, in particular, even though they did add Austin Johnson and Sebastian Joseph Day.
Yeah.
We just talked about Joe Lombardi. Assuming that our offense is again top five, anyone specific on your radar to take over for Joe Lombardi after he takes a head coaching gig next year? Will Staley try to keep a similar offensive scheme?
It's a great question. Alex, do you know if there's somebody within our organization right now that could be internally given the position?
I mean, I would assume Shane Day as quarterback's coach. We didn't really see that with Pep Hamilton, but Pep Hamilton obviously kind of like bounced around a little bit. I would say it would be Shane Day. I would say Shane Day would probably go from QB coach to offensive coordinator if Lombardi were to go, but again, that's all speculative. And then, you know, you could obviously probably have to interview people from outside instead of just giving him the job. So I think they try to keep a similar offensive scheme. You know, what works. But I don't think they'll try to reinvent the wheel too much. And honestly, you don't have to reinvent the wheel that much because you have Justin Herbert, right? I think that is kind of what the offense is. So even if Lombardi were to leave, I don't think a whole lot would change. Chris in the chat brings up tight ends coach Kevin Hoger, right? That's another name we've kind of talked about. So I think there are some internal candidates that they could look at, but I don't think there's anyone that's terribly obvious at this point. Lombardi, I think, interviewed for the Texans job last year. I don't know if he interviewed for another one, but I remember that he was like one of the final like three or four candidates for that job. So I do think there is interest around the league in him. And of course, if you know your resume just says, hey, I coached Justin Herbert and we went to the playoffs and we are often really good, then it's probably going to be someone who gives you a job, except if your name is Eric Bieniemy. Of course, what position do you think Telesco is most likely to add some resources mid-training camp this offseason other than right tackle? So if we're talking about mid-camp signings.
Punter?
Maybe. Yeah. Well, the punter, yeah, because that was another note from Daniel Popper's thing, is Ben Griffiths, who was during a tryout role, but they didn't sign him. So, like, he's still kind of bouncing around the facility, but he's not on the team yet. So if they're not happy with J.K. Scott, if they're not happy with, you know, what they've done in the punter room in general, that could be one where they pursue something. Actually, do they have a kicker other than Dustin Hopkins right now? I actually don't know. That was something that I was thinking about, because, I mean, Dustin Hopkins obviously...
To the Googles. Job.
Yeah, to the Googles. Kaino, but now Vizcaino's in New England. Yeah, he's in New England now. So I was thinking if they were bringing in a kicker that was like competition, even if they know they're giving Dustin Hopkins the job. But I don't remember if they have a kicker. That's like a backup at the top of my head.
We do. We have James McCourt.
Who is he?
I don't know. But I don't know who he is, but it on the Chargers website, they have a picture of him in a Chargers jersey. He kind of looks like Oscar Isaac. He's been there for media day.
Yeah, I would guess that not a single Chargers media member knew who James McCourt was, as good as Daniel Popper is. If you just asked him point blank, who's James McCourt, he would be like, I don't know who that is either. But at least they do have a kicker that's competition. So, I mean, obviously injuries are the biggest thing, right? We've seen this happen in a couple of training camps. Unfortunately, right, Derwin got hurt a couple of years ago. And then agents, that was the Hard Knocks year. Agents started ringing Tom Telesco's phone live on Hard Knocks when Derwin did get hurt. So, I mean, I would say the biggest thing just be injury related. If there is something that happens to the Chargers and then something happens there.
So, hey, I do have a little bit of background on him for you.
Okay. Let's talk about James McCourt. It's June 18th. Yeah.
Okay, so we have James McCourt is a rookie, undrafted free agent rookie. He played for Illinois football. Call it Illinois football, not Illinois football, it looks like.
They're the Illinois Fighting Illini. That is like the name of the team.
That can't be real. I think you're right. I think that's what it says. Yeah, Fighting Illini. Man,
Fighting Illini. Yeah.
I
only know that because they're in the Big Ten and there's like one national television game every year where you have to watch them and like some shitty quarterback that is going to be on a practice squad in a few years in the NFL. Speaking of, Brandon Peters is on the Chargers. He's like our fourth string quarterback right now.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a good pull. But I forgot about that. Yeah, so they have the backup kicker now from Illinois and their fourth string quarterback.
Nice. Yeah. He has the most career 50-plus yard field goals in program history.
Okay.
He's the single season regular. He's the regular season holder. They worded this awkwardly on the website, but he has the most 50-yard field goals in the regular season in the program. Four times he hit two-plus 50-yarders. Two seasons he hit 450-plus yarders, so that's cool. Six most field goals in a season, that's neither here nor there. Not great accuracy, eighth best career field goal accuracy in the program with 71.2%. But he was all Big Ten twice. So I guess that's there, okay. That's not
something there.
Yeah. He's got length, apparently. He can stretch the field with his leg, but looks like it's about it. 71% is not inspiring confidence in me.
Yeah. I think me and Tyler last year had a bet on the show about whether Michael Badgley would go over 82.5%, and then Michael Badgley got cut. So that was a fun time.
Well, did you track it after he went to the Colts? Because he kicked butt.
We said the bet was cut by the Chargers. So the bet only applied if it was the Chargers. So we didn't track if it was the Colts. Otherwise, I would have lost because I bet under 82.5%. Oh my God. SoCal Slime asked, did you guys see Chris's quarterback rankings? If not, what do you guys think about Justin at 4? I actually think Justin was 3 in that ranking because I did unfortunately see the Chris Sims rankings. I think he had Allen 1, Mahomes 2, Herbert 3, Burrow 4, Rodgers 5. I don't understand how anyone can put Burrow over Aaron Rodgers. I will stick by that. I like Joe Burrow.
Alex, did we lose you? People in the chat, did we just lose Alex? Can you guys hear him?
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
People in the chat, have we lost Alex or are y'all losing me? Thank you, Teresa. Okay, it's Alex. Okay, so I'll keep going with that question. So Chris Sims, quarterback rankings, yes, he was ranked 3rd. I think to piggyback off of what Alex was saying, it's really hard to see Burrow ranked ahead of Rodgers. And hey, guys, for the sake of objectivity, please, Alex, looks like you're back.
Okay.
Excellent.
Looks like I'm back. Yeah. Yeah, I am. Yeah, I am using Starbucks Wi-Fi. They got me on there. oops. Yeah.
But Alex, I think you were saying it's hard seeing Aaron Rodgers behind Burrow. And I'll agree with you. And just to be objective, mm-hmm. I would say Herbert hasn't quite earned being in front of Aaron yet as well. But I personally would take Herbert every day of the week over Aaron right now at this point in his career. And I believe it's very likely he will outperform him this year. But if we're going to say it about Burrow, I got to say it about Herbert too. You know, Aaron Rodgers is a 2-time MVP that is coming back as the reigning MVP. So you got to kind of give him the nod there. But looking forward to Herbert getting the MVP this year and being number 1 on the list next year.
So, I mean, I think if you had to do like a top 5, you could either do top 5 projecting, which is like why I think on every top 3 right now, it's like Allen, Mahomes, Herbert. And then, you could either do like top 5 currently. And in that sense, I always kind of rank Mahomes, Rodgers 1-2, and then have like Allen and Herbert and all those guys that are probably projected to leap over Aaron Rodgers at some point, further on. But I just don't understand how you put Burrow there. I know the analytics love total completion percentage, CPOE has, he was obviously the most accurate quarterback last year, but I just don't understand the placement. Going to skip all of these comments about my Wi-Fi after all of that dropped out.
Teresa just owned you, dude. I love that one.
Well, we do all these rest promos, but none of us can get good Wi-Fi. That is kind of true. All right. Jack asks, what positions do you see being slimmed or bulked down on the 53-man team roster compared to last year? Like, do we carry three quarterbacks and four running backs again, or slim those down and add a spot in other positions? I'll say the biggest thing every year is that we talk about how they're going to two quarterbacks, and then they still keep Easton's Tech. So I expect that to still be the case this year. I think they're going to keep four running backs again because, you know, Brandon Staley kind of indicated this in his press conference this week too, where, I mean, he does view Letty Brown and Marks pretty highly. Plus, they have Kelly and Roundtree, and they just drafted Spiller, so I don't see a world where they don't keep four running backs. I'll say tight end is probably the one that could be shaved down because they carried four last year. That might be one where you carry three. Obviously, that could be like a Stone Smart, Hunter Camboyer situation. One of those guys goes to the practice squad, or one of them makes the roster. But I think it's more likely that you keep three with Steven Anderson out of the fold. Trying to think of a position they kept a lot of last year. I guess
inside linebacker. I think inside linebacker, yeah, they had a good amount of guys. They had like five, I believe, and they only play, you know, one or two guys on the field at a time. That's a very decent amount of depth.
Yeah. So, but that goes into like the Amen Ogbong Bamiga thing, because to me, he's kind of like the fifth guy there. So, but importantly, from what Tyler and Steven and other people have heard, they're high on Amen Ogbong Bamiga. So that could be a position where we see how that actually plays out in the preseason. I just, in general, in terms of making the roster, I like more wide receivers. I like more cornerbacks, like just skill positions really on offense and defense. I guess, yeah, that's the other thing, because we talked about them, the idea of keeping six wide receivers as well. I don't think they're going to do that, but if you have like a Jason Moore or Joe Reed who stands out, there could always be, you know, some potential for that. But yeah, last year they kept four wide receivers and then also kept KJ Hill over Tyron Johnson last year, which is infamous. But I don't think there's going to be big changes to what they did last year, but probably just a couple. Like maybe they keep one less tight end and one more defensive lineman, one less linebacker, probably just small stuff like that.
The safety room is going to be very interesting because with Webb returning and us adding Woods to the mix, is Gilman going to be somebody that gets cut? Because he got a decent amount of playing time last year. And, you know, there's times where he looked okay. There were times where he gave up some plays and coverage. So it'll be interesting to see if he's just outright released at this point or waived. I don't know if he's played too much to be able to be stashed. Oh, no, they love vets on the practice squad now. So he might be somebody that gets knocked down to the practice squad this year.
Yeah. I would say safety corner in general is going to be very interesting to see how they roll with that, because we've talked about Dean Leonard as a guy that like has shown flashes obviously in minicamp, but we kind of projected him like outside looking in just because they have so many corners, they have so many DBs in general that it's just hard for some of these guys to make the roster. But I think if they keep more cornerbacks and safeties, then you're probably cutting like one offensive position down, you know, in order to make up for it, or maybe one last quarterback who's not going to play, but they don't seem to really want to do that either, and they want to keep these in the ground. So we'll see how that plays out. Chorizo con Pampas asks, who gets the first crack at an interior offensive line in the event Matt gets moved to right tackle, or Matt, Zion, or Corey go down? Well, Corey is pretty clearly Will Clapp coming in, just because that's its own thing. Zion or Matt, though, I guess would just be Brendan Hymus at this point coming in.
I think it's an open competition right now.
Yeah, open competition right now. But if I had to guess, I would say him. Not a whole lot of.
I would guess week one it might be Clapp, just because of the veterancy. Hamus has shown in camp that he's ready. I know like Matt Money Smith was really amped on him last year and thought he actually might take over the right tackle position. So it's kind of shocking to see how little he was used last year after how much hype he was getting in training camp. So who knows? Maybe we even see him jump storm somehow. I don't know. That's kind of the vibe that people were getting last year, that he might be the backup to Bulaga, but I'm not counting on it. It's not something I would bet my bottom dollar on, but could he slide in there? Like you said, possibly, but I think right now with us bringing on the Saints old offensive lineman, and that's why he came over, offensive line coach, and that's why he came over, that he probably has it to lose initially, with the ability for it to be lost with a good camp from any one of the other guys, including Salyer.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. Steven Gillard says Neighbors can go to the practice squad. He can still bunk with Herbert. I don't think that Neighbors is going to survive. Horvath I think Horvath pretty easily has that. And the Neighbors goes to the practice squad. Jusso Compampos asks, who has more sacks in the first game? Is it Mac or Crosby? I'm going to say Crosby just because of our right tackle situation right now. I wish I could say otherwise, but as long as Storm Norton or Pipkins are there, I think that's the just automatic answer to that question right now.
If Filer were to get moved, I would say Mac all day. If Filer was moved out to right tackle. If he's not and we're rolling out Storm again, I think it's Crosby.
Yep. Someone actually did have a Horvath question before my Wi-Fi died. Let me see if I can find it. It was right up your alley as well. let me see. Someone asked just in general, like how Horvath would be. Oh yeah, here we go. What are your hopes for Xander? I can't make heads or tails of him, but there's some hype. So I'll let the resident Xander Horvath fanboy go first.
So if we're talking about just hopes for Xander, it's that he is a Peyton Hillis type or Mike Allstott, somebody that is not just a blocking fullback. He's somebody, when you look at his tape, he is fairly agile for a guy his size. He's extremely explosive. Like, it might take him one step, but then that second step looks great. He can absolutely hit a hole with, some speed, with decisiveness, and he's not easy to bring down. So my hopes would be to see him on a lot of third down packages in the goal line, because he also has great hands. So if we're in goal line or in third down, I really like him as an outlet for Herbert. He actually has good route running when you watch his pro day tape and not just his games, because in his games, the coaching just had him doing basic little routes to the flats, but I think there's a lot more there than what we saw. So I really would love to see, it's not going to happen often, but some games where he gets as many as like 10 touches, and he's just kind of wearing down the defense a little bit and being a true change of pace back when contrasted against Eckler. And with that play style, I love the fact that, Horvath can be an effective lead blocker for Eckler, but we could also flex Eckler out to the slot and let him, be more of a receiver, or sometimes we like to put him out wide even, but let him be more of a receiver and not lose the risk of a running play, because he really, really, especially on like a draw where, the defensive line might start pass rushing and he takes the inside handoff and has just like one linebacker to truck over before he gets a large gain. There's a lot of things they can do with him. I just hope he gets used and utilized as a true power runner with versatility.
Yeah, I hope so as well. And you mentioned kind of the like receiving aspect of his play too. That's something that when they've had Kelly on the field, when they've had Roundtree on the field, like you just know that they're not going to throw to those guys. And when they do throw to those guys, it usually doesn't go super well. So I would say that in that sense, Horvath already over them in terms of like his receiving ability. Isaiah Spiller can obviously kind of be a change of pace back from Austin Eckler, and that's what they drafted him to be as their RB2. But I think Horvath there's a legit argument for him to be some kind of like RB3 type on this roster based on how they constructed it. If that's how it plays out in actuality, right, we have to see. But right now, I think he's a pretty high priority fullback with some decent running back potential, as Kyle has as Kyle said. Teresa Kumbapa says, let's hope the Raiders kick Leatherwood back out to right tackle. I'd love that. I don't know if that's actually what they're going to end up doing for their sake.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When Neighbors gets cut, does the victory brisket die with him? I think the team keeps it as a tradition. Now, I think that's more a Herbert thing at this point than it is a Neighbors thing. So I think they're going to keep doing it. But maybe they'll have like one final brisket after he's cut and sent down to the practice squad. But that'll be interesting to watch.
Wrong Speedy pointed out Mike Allstott type player for Horvath would be a godsend. If you guys want a really fun video to go watch as Charger fans, there was a game that Mike Allstott and Lorenzo Neal were the two running backs for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that were being used heavily. And it was just kind of a screw you, we're running the ball down your throat game. Just two big power rushers as the running backs. It's a very, very, very fun watch, especially as, you know, Charger Lorenzo Neal fans.
Yeah. That also sounds like one of those games that makes you feel like, oh, that one was definitely played 20 years ago. Went against Lorenzo Neal. But those are definitely the good old days compared to some of the modern NFL stuff. Rich E has a super chat in here. Get your super chats in if you want your question automatically answered. With a better defense, do you think Herbert's stats go down since ideally we'll have leads more often? So I guess this is something we talk about when we talk about MVP, when we talk about all those kind of like potential awards or stats. I don't really think they would go down. In fact, like, I think if you have a defense that's creating more takeaways, right, like that would bring up Herbert's stats, like in theory, to maybe, what did he throw, 36 touchdowns last year? So you could get that up to 40, right? If you have like a couple more drives go the Chargers' way. So yeah, to me, I would say that having a better defense means you'll ultimately have more scoring opportunities. Maybe those aren't all like Herbert touchdowns or Herbert passing yards, but just by default, I think that they would actually go up even if they do have leads. And I think that you've seen this as a coaching staff really last year that does not want to get conservative when they do have a lead. So for me, I think that a better defense ultimately leads to better offense.
Yeah. Yep. Couldn't agree more.
Yep.
Kyle Tucker. Yes, that's exactly what we meant by that. What I meant by that game. You nailed it. Yes. I won't repeat it, but yes, that's exactly the kind of game it was.
Wrong Speedy asks, do the Browns go over 500 this year? Depends. I mean, this is such a, because there was that report today that they're gonna like potentially suspend Deshaun for the year. So I mean, if that were to happen, then no. But I don't think that puts Baker back into play. since he's probably going to Carolina. So I would probably vote no on that right now.
Who do they have behind him? They brought somebody on that.
Brissett. They signed Jacoby Brissett.
I think they can go 500.
Yeah. I was just thinking about it through the context of, like, if he's your QB1 and you have to go against Burrow, Lamar. I mean, we'll see. The Steelers never have a losing record, even if Kenny Pickett's their quarterback. Mm-hmm. That could still, like, be last team in the division potential, even mm-hmm. with the pieces they have on defense. So I don't know. I would say that if Deshaun doesn't play, they're probably like the fourth team in the division, which probably means you're going under 500. I have to put it on because he made it a super chat. Teresa says, this is a donation to upgrade Alex's Wi-Fi. Please do not misappropriate these funds. That is all. These funds are going to be misappropriated just because you made the comment. So, oh, God. Yeah, as we just said, Baker's not going to play for the Browns, and I think he's still going to Carolina. That seems to be a thing that's in flux as it is now. But no, I don't think that Baker ends up playing for the Browns if Deshaun is suspended.
If we want to build on that, though, yeah. Alex, I would say Baker's handling of this could not have been worse for him. I think a lot of us saw potential possible year-long suspension for Deshaun, right? I mean, even the Browns indicated that was a significant possibility by keeping his salary at $1 million this year to try to prevent the league from being able to, like, take some of that money from him. And Baker, by throwing this temper tantrum, is now in a position where, like you mentioned, in a contract year, he could be going to a much, much worse team instead of sticking around and playing for the Browns and then getting the bag. Because I would have said if they hadn't traded for Deshaun, and if he hadn't thrown this fit, if Baker just was given a chance to let his shoulder heal and came out for another season, there's a good chance that he would have brought himself up again to at least an above average level as a quarterback. And I don't mean, you know, top 10. I mean,
right,
muddled in that 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th ranking. And that's going to get you paid in this league. I really think him going to Carolina now is going to put him in that same sort of potential of being a Darnold or being somebody that now has to go learn a system and be on a subpar team and really let that affect his stats. So that was probably the worst way he could have handled it, instead of staying home with a very good team with playoff potential and just trying to return to his 2020 playing.
Yeah. It was very like Ben Simmonsy, right? Where it's just like, once you take yourself away from the team entirely and you're not showing up to practice, and then, you know, people don't see you, and suddenly you're in a sub, you know, I guess Ben Simmons is different because he got traded to the Nets and then decided not to play still. But I think anytime that you don't show up to work and you don't show up, you know, to have your teammates, it makes the situation instantly worse, not just for the team, but also for Baker himself, like you kind of mentioned. So yeah, I do think that he didn't handle it quite as well as he could have. Stephen Gillard says, Panthers have better pass catchers than the Browns, in my opinion. Moore, Anderson, and Marshall. Browns got Njoku. Who are the Browns? Didn't the Browns just get Amari Cooper?
Ooh, they may have. Yeah, let me double check.
The Browns. Yeah, I was gonna say, because I was trying to remember who the Browns receivers are, just because, like, obviously Odell's gone and Jarvis is gone, but I mean, Amari Cooper is still a top 10 receiver. Like, I mean, I would not knock the Browns down that bad, and they have Anthony Schwartz and some other weapons still. Panthers have better weapons, arguably, but a much worse overall team than the Browns. So, I mean, I don't think that's worth the trade-off.
Dude, if they have, I saw one name. Dude, Jakeem Grant. I like that guy. He's nice. He's on the
Browns.
Yeah. They signed him this year.
I like Jakeem
Grant. He's a slippery guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other standouts, I'd say, are like just people that catch your eye are Harrison Bryant. Actually had some good games with them. They had some chemistry. We also have Peoples Jones, had chemistry with Baker. So, I mean, they still have guys.
I mean, you can't talk about them also without talking about their running back room. And right now they have Chubb, they have Hunt, and they have Micah Jerome Ford in the running back room now. So, like, to me, plus their offensive line and everything they have, like, if I'm Baker, like you said, I'd much rather be with the Browns. And they have Dearness Johnson, too, I think, still. Yeah, so they're loaded, right? Like, I mean, even though they don't have, like, and they have Amari Cooper. Even though they don't have, like, a ton of guys that are, like, the best player at their position, I think they have plenty still of offensive talent. So I'd still rather be there in Carolina. And once you're at defense, like, it's not even close in that regard. Clinton Sims asks, would you like the addition of Darius Slayton to the Chargers if he's cut by the Giants? I would probably say no on this one. I think he's a little bit redundant with what they have in other guys. If they were looking even for burner or intermediate type, but yeah. I would say stick away to not taking Giants receivers. I think that's generally... better for offenses, better for the league. I don't see much utility to that. I think Dearness Johnson would have been the perfect Charger if the Chargers really wanted to have pursued that. Obviously, I think his contract would have been being that a little bit complicated, but that would have been something where I think I would have offered the Browns. That would have really fortified their running back two position in a way where, even though I think Isaiah Spiller going to be good, I think that would have been really good for the Chargers.
I mean, to get a guy like that for $2 or $3 million, because no one had spent more than $2 million, I think, on their third running back. No one else in the league had done that. So if we had even offered them $2.5 million, that's a lot for their third running back. And now seeing that they have Jerome Ford, which I don't know if we could still send a contract his way or not. And
I would. Tyler wouldn't, but I would.
I don't know when the RFA tender is locked in, but man, if we still could, I would throw $2.5 or $3 million at it, because again, even though we're maxed out a little bit at how many players we can will earn us a compensatory free pick, he's one of those guys that could break out and pay you very well. Who knows how many carries he'd get with Spiller on the team now, but I would take him just in 2022 over Spiller, just because we've seen him and his success in this league, and it's there.
Yeah, I also just don't think it's the worst thing to pay $2 or $3 million for an RB2, or even if he's RB3 behind Spiller. Like, you know, you're still getting really good value out of that. Then you can cut one of Roundtree or Kelly. You can kind of clean up the running back room and still, you know, they're probably not going to do it just because, like, they have 17 running backs now as they view their roster before the cutdowns. But I would have, you know, gone for that. Chorizo Con Papa says, name the 7 AFC playoff teams and their seeding. So, obviously, Jeez. This is very early. Jeez. A lot of things in flux. I guess we'll go division winners first. So, let's start AFC West. Who's winning the West?
Chargers.
I still say Chiefs for now. I just have to see it, and I would love for the Chargers to do it, but if I'm just predicting, I think it has to be the Chiefs. North,
I would go. And now I am making sure I don't screw anything up here and get exposed. North, I would have to go.
I go Ravens. The
Bengals repeat it. Yeah, I think the Ravens are, since somebody in the chat said dark horse, they really are, because they overcame so many injuries last year to still be in the conversation and had an incredible draft. So I'm going to go with you and say Ravens.
Yeah, like I think people just go, oh, well, they fell off last year, but it's like Lamar was hurt. Like John Harbaugh isn't going, you know, had them in games they really shouldn't have been in without Lamar. And plus the draft. Like I just think they're going to, I don't know if I would go as far as to say they're going to have like the 14-2 2019 Lamar year, but like I don't know if they're that far off from having that level of dominance again, even though the division probably is a lot better than it was then, but I don't know. I'd still take the Ravens. So, okay.
James just asked, do the Ravens have wide receivers? They have wide receivers on their team that won't drop wide open deep balls and then blame the system. So,
oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I don't know, like people do the Ravens wide receivers thing, but it's like, they've been having success without having great wide receivers, like, too. I mean, that's the thing, I think, come playoff time, like, the fact that they don't really have, like, that great skill position player, like, that could affect them. But it's like, Lamar is the team. So, like, I mean, it almost, you would love to have receivers out there, but with how they do that offense, like, I think having, like, a high-value skill position players matters a little bit less. AFC South.
I will say Colts all day. I think they get the play from their quarterback that they needed last year in Ryan, and just by Ryan not, you know, trying to be a superhero and being willing to hand the ball off to Taylor. I think it runs through the running back room now and their defense, and they get it done and take the division.
Yeah, I agree. I think Colts, just with the Ryan over Wentz upgrade, that makes a lot of sense. Plus, I mean, I don't know, like Derrick Henry's coming back from injury. Ryan Tannehill, last time we saw him was not very good. So, I mean, that could be kind of like the decline of the Titans right now. Yeah, so I would probably take the Colts there as well. So we have Colts, Ravens as division winners. I have the Chiefs, you have the Chargers, and then we have the East. I think we're both saying Bills.
Bills, yeah.
Yep, we're both saying Bills. So do you want to give your wild card teams first then for going 5-7?
Well, I guess since we're doing seeding, right, I guess we can both do our seedings real quick within that. Just start 1-4s, and then just our wild cards will seed as we say them. So what do you think? How would you stack those four?
Ravens 1, Bills 2, Chiefs 3, Colts 4.
Wow, okay. Okay, yeah. I would definitely agree with you, Colts 4. I think Ravens... Man, that's tough. I think it goes Ravens and then Chargers... I think both become victims of very strong divisions and swapping some divisional games. The only reason I give the Chargers the nod is because they, I think we start out 2-0 personally.
Yeah.
I think the Chiefs having those rookies, having so many rookies on defense and having to refine their defensive identity will take, I think, and that's the reason I think the Chargers are going to win our division. Is I think the Chiefs are going to struggle the first half of the year and then really pull it together and come alive the second half and be a threat in the playoffs. But so I would say Chargers get the slight edge within their division over the Ravens that boosts them into the second seed. And then, yeah, same as you, Bills take that first seed. Tua and Tyreek have emotional relationship issues. when Tyreek can't get those 60-yard passes, and yeah, they're going to, you know, Patriots are going to be their biggest threat, but who knows if the Patriots repeat what they did last year. That'll be very interesting to see too.
Yeah. They're sort of an offensive, what are they going to do? I mean, I don't know what that offense is going to be. They've talked about having like four different people as the play caller, and it might be Patricia, who was previously their defensive coordinator. That didn't end particularly well for them. So I don't know. There's a lot of question marks there on offense in terms of who's going to be calling the plays. But I mean, as long as you have Belichick and Mac Jones, you kind of know what you're doing. Yeah. So, okay. I guess that gets us to our wild cards now. Before people kill me, Chargers are the 5 seed, even though I have the Chiefs winning the division. I don't think there's much question there. 6 and 7 seeds. This is where I think it gets a little tough. I'll say 6 seed Bengals. This is where it gets hard. Because this is sort of a Browns question, because I think Browns are certainly a playoff team if Deshaun Watson's playing. If he's not, then I don't think they make it. And then you probably have like the Steelers, Dolphins, Patriots, like that group of teams. A Titans, obviously, as well. I'm between the Titans and Patriots for the 7th seed. I'll go with the Patriots.
Okay.
I feel very conflicted on that.
I'm enjoying this because you and I are disagreeing. This is
never mind. Derrick Henry factor. I'm putting Titans 7th seed. Sorry. Oh. I was. Yeah. Okay. So I'm gonna do 1-7 Ravens. 1-7 Ravens, Bills, Chiefs. Ravens, Bills, Chiefs, Colts. Then 5, 6, 7 is Chargers, Bengals, Titans.
Gotcha. So I'm at Bills, Chargers, Ravens, Colts, 1-4. Uh-huh. Then I'm going to go 5. I've got as Bengals.
Okay.
6th, I've got as the Chiefs.
Uh-huh.
7th, I'm going to go with the Broncos.
No, I think that's fair. The only thing I have with the Broncos is they're going to be in that group of teams for that 6 and 7 seed too. I don't know if I buy Russell Wilson. Like, I don't know if I buy that whole offense. He's going to be playing a lot of too high in the AFC, and being in the AFC West in general, struggled with that. The Broncos have good weapons, but like, I don't think they have like really elite tier weapons when it comes to like comparing against the rest of the AFC West. I could certainly see the Broncos being in there. Someone had Broncos Country Let's Ride in the chat.
Alex doesn't want to ride, guys.
I'm not going to ride with Russell Wilson this time. Although I could see it. I don't know. I'm worried about Russell Wilson decline if I'm the Broncos based on what we've seen, if he really falls out of being a top 10 quarterback, but I don't know. I could see the Broncos being in that group, but I think that could be one of the things also where people predict 3 AFC West teams from the beginning of the season, and then they just all start to beat on each other and like 2 of them fall out of it like that. Totally. So I wouldn't put 3 AFC West teams in, but it still could end up being that way. So, to recap, what were your 7 again?
So my 7 are the Bills, Chargers, Ravens, Colts, Bengals, Chiefs, and Broncos.
Okay. And yeah, my 7 were Ravens, Bills, Chiefs. I keep forgetting the AFC South because they're so forgettable. Colts, then yeah. Chargers, then Bengals, then Titans. So that is my 7. I feel a little bit weird about the picks because there's always like the whole, I guess I put the Ravens back in and I put the Chargers in and they didn't make the playoffs last year. So I do have enough shakeup, but yeah, the bottom, you can make so many arguments for those 6 and 7 seeds where you have like probably a solid 6 teams that could be in those 2 seeds. Once you get past like the first 5. So I don't know. That's going to be interesting, but let us know in the chat.
Looking at your list, Alex, which team scares you the most in the playoffs? Specifically against our roster.
I'd say probably out of that list, I think the Bills, just because I think the Chargers have had some, it's a little bit outdated. They had some success against Lamar and kind of containing that Harbaugh system. Plus, they don't have a lot of like top tier weapons for the playoffs. But the Bills, if you're talking about that potentially being a road game, based on my seeding in the cold weather, Josh Allen, and they don't really have like a great running game to challenge the Chargers, but that is one of the days where you would have like the secondary be absolutely tested against Stephon Diggs, who's one of the best route runners in the NFL. I don't see that going super well for the Chargers, although, you know, you never know what would play out this year. But yeah, I mean, they really, what that comes down to is we have Herbert and they have an Allen, right? Like they have one of the three guys in the league that can really counterpunch at quarterback. And so for me, I would probably be most scared of the Bills.
Gotcha. I would say
out of your seven,
I would say the Ravens.
I would.
And the reason solely being because of Staley's unique defense and how it might leave us with the complicated zone schemes and whatnot, a little exposed to potential breakdowns with a quarterback that can scramble for a little bit longer than the mean, you know, between his ability to potentially just stay alive in the pocket, and that's where we gave up a lot of plays last year, is when, you know, the quarterback was able to scramble for a bit and mix up our guys. That and the fact that Mariota was able to come in and be the most productive rusher for the Raiders against our best defensive front.
Right.
Like we did get a little mixed up with read options and with those type of things. So is that gap and a half system of Staley's as effective when running an option style defense, or just having option wrinkles in there that they would probably have for Lamar? So that would be my biggest concern, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, we saw that last year. Obviously the Chargers were pretty hurt entering that Ravens game and had some injuries, but the Ravens offense did not let up on them all game long. And that turned into a long afternoon. SoCal Slime asks in the chat, if Kyle has Denver at 7, does that mean he predicts the Chargers to split with the Broncos? What do you think about that one?
It's a really good question. I haven't broken down how I think the Chargers are going to do game after game, but I don't think it takes much out of Russell Wilson for Denver to be more competitive this year. And Drew Lock just seemed like a disaster to me. I think him alone for pointing at Bosa and saying he's tired and just poking the bear, it's dumb. But so building off that, will it happen? It's really hard, guys. I come on this show with Alex and with the other guys from Guilty as Charged, and I'm tasked with being objective, right? I should not just come on here and be a freaking homer. But this is the best I've seen our roster in, 15 years, 20 years? How long has it been? Probably 15 years. I really think there's a chance that we have a 14-3, 15-2 type season and really tear it up. Is that something that's going to happen? No. Do I think there's a strong chance? Yes. So do I want to come in right off the bat and say a team that I think is going to be just scraping into the playoffs should split their games with us? No. I think there's a strong chance that we take them down twice. In fact, if we are going to go 4-2 in our division, that should be the team that we do it against. Even though I didn't have the Raiders sliding in, I definitely think the Raiders and Broncos are pretty interchangeable to me. So I hope that we're able to, you know, beat both of them twice.
Yeah. See, the problem is they play at Mile High. Like that would be one of those situations where if they didn't play there, I would pick the Chargers to win, but something always goes wrong. Like there's always like, what was it a couple of years ago when Philip Rivers took the sack and they ran out the clock. That was a big one, obviously, when they blew like a 16-point lead with not much time remaining. So I don't know. That's been a house of horrors for them to try to get over. I don't know. I go split with the Broncos and Chiefs by default, and then I think the sweep potential is like the Raiders, just because I think the Raiders are much worse defensively than those other two teams. But yeah, I would love to see them go 4-2, 5-1 in the division. That'd be great. 6-0 even. But I always start predicting 3-3 in division because I'm just a coward. And I've seen too many years where they've gone 1-5 and 2-4 in the division and have kind of blown up their season because of that. But yeah. And then SoCal Slime sort of followed up with this question. Who's the most sweepable? I tend to think it's the Raiders. out of that group. If there's a team where I had to bet that they go 2-0 against, it would be them.
I would go with, it's funny that I'm like, it feels like I'm backtracking here, but within the division, I think it might be the Broncos just because the Raiders adding Devontae and having as many offensive That's weapons true. As they have, they're going to be a really, really interesting team to test our defense against, because like you and I talked about before, Alex, we've got our guy that can man up against their number one, but who's going to be their number one? They have three guys that on other teams would be the primary option in Waller, Renfro, and Devontae. So watching that game is going to give us a very clear indication of how Staley plans on, you know, rolling out this defense for the remainder of the year.
Yeah, no, I agree. I go back and forth. To me, they're interchangeable. And I've gone back and forth on like who's 3 and 4 in the division, because I think no matter how you order them, I do think it's Chiefs 1, Chargers 2. But even if you think it's Chiefs 2 or Chiefs 2, Chargers 1, like I think those are clearly the top two teams. And then you can probably swap the Chiefs or the Broncos and the Raiders at the bottom. That's sort of like my thing with the division. I think they're really close together. Raiders have better offensive weapons. Broncos have a better quarterback. Broncos have a much better defense. But yeah, the interesting thing about both of them is like I have no idea what to make of their coaching situations, because Nathaniel Hackett's obviously coming over from Green Bay, with a new quarterback, pretty much completely new offense, and now with the Raiders you're bringing in Josh McDaniels. Who has had some trouble in New England, and obviously is like one of the biggest quitter phonies in the world.
I was just about to say they haven't announced who's calling plays yet. Maybe it's because McDaniels is still in the mix.
Josh McDaniels is coming back. Oh my God. Yeah. I don't know how you hire that guy to be a head coach again. I don't know how he keeps getting this many chances, but here we go with the Rangers, I guess, in the attempt to become Patriots West. Okay. I guess this is a good question to end on since we just talked about division. We just talked about the AFC playoff teams. Floor and ceiling for our record if we stay relatively healthy.
And we're assuming that Herbert is safe and bubble wrapped the entire season.
Yeah, I would assume that's what we meant by relatively healthy, because if we have Chase Daniel getting thrown in, then we're not relatively healthy.
Yeah, I think we could go 15-2. I think we could do it if we stayed relatively healthy, like we've said. I think adding a few, like, I actually think that's well within the realm. I think we're likely to go, I think we're more likely to go 13-4. So if you were like to make one of those brackets, like one of those candlesticks, I think 15-2 would be like everything goes right for us this season. 13-4 is probably more realistic and within like kind of just the mean of where we should be falling. And even if we take some key injuries but maintain Herbert, but just have some bad swings overall, I don't think we should finish worse with this roster than 11-6, personally.
Yeah. I'll say I think the floor is 10-7. I think that, this is kind of like if things go wrong, if they lose like a couple close games, they shouldn't, plus injuries or just like bad coaching calls in general. Like, that's always a possibility, or they get like a really unlucky penalty in one of those games or a missed field goal, which has been this team's bane of their existence prior to Dustin Hopkins getting here. I would say 10-7 is the floor. Ceiling, I'm not gonna go quite as high as 15-2, but I'll say ceiling is 14-3. I'll say between 10-14, that is kind of where I'm at. Obviously if there's not a whole lot of difference between 14-3 and 15-2, right? If you get like one lucky result, one of those division games, that could just be the difference. All right. Yeah, I think that's going to do it for today's Q&A, everyone. Thanks, everyone, for coming out. Thanks for your super chats. As always, you can follow Kyle at the Kyle D on Twitter. You can follow me at Alex Innsdorf 99. How to remember my Twitter handle. You can follow the podcast at GacPodcast 17. And we will see you guys next show. I don't know when we're going to be doing the next show. I don't know what it will be in these 2 weeks that Steven Tyler's on vacation. We're still manufacturing the content, but we'll try to figure out some show ideas in the meantime and see if we do a Q&A next week. So see you guys later.